and welcome to the October 4th, 2007 edition of the Big Monkey Podcast, recorded on-site at Big Monkey Comics at 1722 B 14th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. Here on a crowded street corner where we all fake our own deaths to protect the lives of our babies, of which Devon has many, five guys get together to ponder those questions that have bothered us for years, such as, what does kissing the question taste like? This is the Big Monkey Podcast. There you go. I am Ben Hatton, writer of Those Wednesdays, and I'll be your MC for the next hour of comic discussion and debate. Sorry about the longer-than-usual break between podcasts. I needed to have surgery. I can't tell you where, so let's just say that there are parts of me that are bionic. Anyway, as usual, I'm joined by four guys who know way more about comics than I do. So let's start with some introductions, directly to my right.
I am Devon, the legend killer Sanders, and I write Seven Hells.
Ah, Seven Hells. I'm John Brooks of John X Bills, and I write Face Down to Gus with help from his own Those Wednesdays.
I guess we know.
What?
I just kept crawling into the Absorbus Gun, and I'm very confused.
I'm John Kerry. I write Face Down in the Gutters. And I don't know what just happened, but I'm really sad that I don't get pyro when I come in.
That's what that sound effect will be. I'll just put it in there. Boom!
Yeah.
John Kerry came in a bubble like Glenda the Good Witch.
Now he's doing the pose.
That's my routine.
Oh.
But I'm...
He's gay, ladies. Let's go! Oh.
Okay, so if you are a regular listener to the show, you know that we tend to complain. We tend to focus a little more on the negative. So today... Yes, we do. It's good radio. So today we're going to try to do something new. Today instead we're going to do bad radio and focus on not what's being done
Set
wrong with the companies that is there. No, today we're going to talk about what's being done right with the comics. To start off, let's talk about Marvel and Iron Fist. Ooh. What can one say about Daniel Rand, the Iron Fist? Created by Gil Kane and Roy Thomas in the mid-70s, Iron Fist bounced from comic to comic for the next 30 years. There were two attempts at his own series. He teamed up with Power Man for 50 issues, and from 1991 to 1992, he was a supporting character in Namor. Now, I know I said we'd talk about, you know, what is being done right, but I have to start this off with a statement, and then we'll discuss it. Up until recently, I would say that Iron Fist has been a shallow D-list character, little more than a holdover from a craze that died out 30 years ago. And I want to know, agree or disagree? Start with Devon.
Agree. Okay. I agree that it is a played-out character in the sense that Richard Dragon Kung Fu Fighter is a played-out character.
That no one cares about Kung Fu anymore?
No. No one cares about Kung Fu anymore. I mean, yeah, I mean... When was the last time Jet Li had, like, a number one movie on
it? Certainly not Fearless.
Yeah.
That movie sucked. Brooks?
I agree with a maybe. I liked Iron Fist. Oh, I still like him. I liked him for a long time, even though I never read his series when it came out.
It's like me and the Metal Man. We catch the essentials, and we're like, this is the best! I've always been an Iron Fist fan. Skip?
Of course I agree. I've never heard of him before today. but you know what? That's exactly the kind of character that becomes fodder for something great.
Yep.
Great plants grow in great manure.
Ouch!
That's good. That's a metaphor of the week.
That isn't. We got it out of the way. It's all downhill from out here.
I'm just going to phone it in from right out. God.
Kerry, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to agree. If you read any of his early appearances, he's just a honky Bruce Lee. But he does have an astonishingly cool costume.
Yes.
And that's a big win.
He will kick your... No, forget that. He has yellow booties.
Yellow booties. He's going to do some ballet and then break your face.
Yeah.
But why, if that's the case, why was he so popular? Why now are we suddenly
popular? And that's why he disappeared for 30 years. He was in a book where he was like second fiddle to a guy who hung out with Stingray. You know, like, it was a cool costume showcase, I guess.
You know, he basically died at the end of Power Man and Iron Fist.
Well, he got cancer.
Yeah, no, he was like dead. They thought Luke Cage killed him.
Right, because he got cancer, and then Luke Cage was blamed for his cancer.
What?
Yeah.
It's a secondary power.
Luke Cage gives you tumors.
No, they were like, actually, they blamed him for his death, and he was like, no, my friend died of cancer. But they were like, no, you killed him. And then, wow. 10 years later, someone was like, I really don't want him to have cancer. That was an alien.
Is that where Alan Burton. Moore got the idea in Watchmen?
Alien, yeah, because yeah. Luke Cage did it.
Yeah. So many nerds on the internet of the day were like, man, he totally ripped this off from Power Fantasy. That Alan Moore's a hack.
What's that, ham radio?
Yeah, and they were angrily reporting to each other.
Reporting on Usenet. Yeah. I don't like this. Where are we going with this?
I'm not worrying. Let's jump forward to 2005 and Ed Brubaker's run on Daredevil. Which is how Iron Fist, not in his own comic, got reintroduced. And it seems that what we get a lot of times now is writers who really love the character. Ed Brubaker was probably the only dude who really loved himself.
Bendis run on that.
Bendis.
Bendis was well before Brubaker.
Luke Cage and Iron Bendis Fist were his bodyguards, were his Daredevil's bodyguards.
Yeah. Which they
were
had been done before, too. Yeah.
My bad. I didn't read Bendis' run on Daredevil.
Neither did I.
Well, that's a whole nother discussion.
Indeed.
I just background research because I don't read the current run on Daredevil.
Fortunately, you have four guys who know much more about comics than you.
Fortunately. So he takes over being Daredevil. Brubaker moves him into a character. Why? Is it just love that, like, hey, I really like this character? Or is there something...
He's one of those, like, Marvel characters that, like, it's almost DC in a way, you know, where he's just, like, he's so atrociously out there that it's like, I can't believe this is out there. And someone, you know, was smart enough, Brubaker / Bendis, to say, hey, let's give it another shot and let's stop taking it so damn seriously. The idea of, like, you know, a white guy, you know, with a dragon tattoo on his chest. With a do-rag and booties on, you know, going out there and fighting crime. It's like, no, let's basically... They turned the Immortal Iron Fist into a DC comic where you find out there's, you know, the Iron Fist is a legacy. So it's like, yeah, you know, they figured out how to make it work.
See, I think, and I agree with that, that there is a legacy that they've suddenly put in, but I think they added seriousness to... A character that didn't have seriousness before.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like...
Because they're taking him way more seriously.
Oh, God. Like, when he has, like, you know, a fight or something, and he's, like, you know, and he's using, like, actual techniques, and then at the end, he's just, like, Brooklyn headbutt. And it's like, okay, I can read that.
Well, but is that part of the natural succession of characters like this? Like, they're introduced early on, people realize they're stupid, they fall into disuse... They're brought back as a secondary character. They're brought back sort of semi-comedically. Oh, ha-ha, I've brought back the Rainbow Raider. Oh, ha-ha, I've brought back Iron Fist.
Right.
And then people like that enough that they put in some serious backstory and they make it a richer character. I mean, isn't this the story of Booster Gold?
Yeah, definitely.
Or Black Canary.
Or Black Canary, or any character, honestly. It's like, really, you know, Green Arrow didn't become a character truly until, like, you know, Denny O'Neil was like, all right, well... Give him some kind of crazy backstory, you know, because before he was just like a guy in a Robin Hood suit. So yeah, I guess he's Marvel's equivalent of Green Arrow.
I wouldn't go that far.
I don't know. Rich playboy gets lost in the wilderness.
No,
I hate you guys.
It's like when you have, you know, like a burnout neighborhood in a city. No, it's exactly.
Superman breaks his head.
Iron Fist is his own ghetto. Yeah,
it's exactly like that, because then somebody can say, "What the hell? I might as well put in a hula hoop store here
or a stadium, like."
Well, in Washington, yeah, but only when something gets run down enough can you have like edgy, chancy businesses in it. That suddenly make a place hip and cool, that make people want to come to it, and then revitalize the neighborhood. And that's what's happening with a lot of these characters.
Yeah, hip.
Think of Dr. 13.
Right. It's like, you know, the thing with, like, Immortal Iron Fist is that it's become, like, you know, hipster du jour, you know? Yeah.
Hipsters like PBR.
They love PBR. And it's like, hey, I love, like, white guys and white booties who do kung fu and who's best friend to black men with steel hard skin. You know? I love that type of thing.
I love Shaw Brothers Kung Fu.
And it's like, you know, it's going to sound weird, but, you know, it's like this whole thing of, like, you know, I guess sort of blaxploitation being co-opted and going out into the real world, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, there's actually a place for Iron Fist.
And there's a place for, yeah. And those things that were cool back in the 70s, you know, hey, in, are now kind of becoming cool again. Like,
right,
you
but
know,
see,
we,
but the thing about the 70s, it was like, I was around then. These were cool things, but nobody knew that they were cool because they were just all around you. You know, it was like, who knew, like, you know, for instance, like, you know, the pet rock would be cool or something like that. Or, you know, it was just like, hey, I got a pet rock. Isn't that cool? And it's like, no. But now it's kind of like, yo, it's kind of cool that, like, somebody had a damn pet rock, you know?
No, that's still not cool.
No. Okay.
Does that mean that Iron Fist is in danger of becoming what he was originally? No. A character that's tied to a fad, like this weird post-ironic, I have a boner for old things that were kind of cheesy then? Like, do you think it'll eventually fade out where you don't have, like, the entire blogverse going, like, man, he's kicking pirates or whatever?
Well, no, because eventually people will forget that he was cheesy to begin with.
Right.
Yeah,
because they will only know
the background.
Right.
Think of me and, like, my knowledge of certain DC characters, my love for Green Arrow. You guys give me a pretty hard time because I'm like, oh, he was always this. He was always this liberal. And you guys are like, no, he was a Batman ripoff. That's before my history. Therefore,
right.
I think of it that way.
Or Starman.
It's
another good example.
Right.
Yeah. Without the history even, I'm just throwing it out there that it seems like it might be something faddish, like hanging on to a cultural phenomenon.
Well, see, I think Iron Fist is going to be one of those characters where he's only going to be as good as the hipster who's writing them.
Yeah.
You know?
And Matt Fraction is you know, the hipster writer
King
right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know? So it's just like, it's like when, you know, when Geoff Johns leaves Hawkman, it's like, where does Hawkman go? It's like, gradually down. You know? So Iron Fist better keep Matt Fraction on that book for a good long while.
He needs 5 years of history for it. Someone,
I
agree. I
can guarantee you, if Zeb Wells comes on Immortal Iron Fist, that book is canceled.
Okay. I have a question, which is, what do we think is going right in the comic?
Okay, what's going right?
Yep.
The fact that, like, it doesn't take itself too seriously, and that it's actually self-contained within the Marvel Universe, and isn't, like, you know, every issue plastered across it, Civil War, The Initiative.
Even though that's where he refound really his popularity. Like, you really saw Iron Fist come back into the swing of things in House of M.
But you know what?
House of M.
When he was part of, like, Luke Cage's...
Yeah,
he was part of Luke Cage's underground resistance. That was the most FaceTime he had gotten.
And he was dressed as Daredevil.
I think it was more as Daredevil in the
it.
Daredevil series when he was actually showing up, you know, continuously as a bodyguard who dressed kind of weird.
But, you know, honestly, and I don't think we touched upon this, but, you know, the thing that I think made Iron Fist, like, kind of awesome, the fact that, like, the world is kind of said, you know what, fighting's cool. You know, it's like you turn on, like, you know, cable television and, like, the big pay-per-views are Ultimate Fighting Championships. And that's what, like, you know, that's essentially what Immortal Iron Fist is. It's like you open it up and it's like, okay, how am I going to fight this sumo wrestler? Okay, a Brooklyn headbutt, you know? So it's just, it's tapping into what's going on right now, just as it did back in the 70s. Yeah.
And what were you saying yesterday? Something about heat. Something with, it was a...
Heat. Stealing heat.
Stealing heat.
Yeah, but I was talking about what Brad Meltzer did with Black Canary.
With Black Canary. But I was thinking about Iron Fist, and I really like it. I think Matt Fraction is doing great work with it, and... It is. It's much more mythic. He's adding this sort of mythology that we didn't have before that is a good mythology. He's adding, you know, what it should have been when someone thought back. You know, yeah, there's been 75 Iron Fists. Well, let's hear about them. Let's hear why it's great to be an Iron Fist.
It's not great.
Well, no. Or why it's really depressing. Why he's more like a doomed hero. And Bendis, I think, did a really good job with Iron Fist in Avengers. But I'm worried that they're going to play him out.
I,
you know?
It's more like...
Because it's really well done, but any, you know, you can love the first Matrix, but the moment everyone wears a, you know, a black trench coat, you're like, God, I hate that movie.
I think it's like, he's only in two books, and there are a lot of people who show up way more than that.
And we're not tired of him yet, Wolverine.
And it's just, you read Iron Fist, and he's basically just fighting people up and down the street, and then... going back to his mansion to say, I'm pretty rich, so I could, like, sit around for a little bit. And in the New Avengers, they're doing whatever New Avengers do. They talk to each other and fight ninjas. And then that's what he does. He fights ninjas. So it fits.
That's kind of all you need.
That is all you
need about him.
It's, I agree. It's a continuity, or it's a like continuity free, World War Hulk free, really good story.
Well, but now, but what you're talking about here, what I'm hearing you guys say, is not that there's anything particularly right that's being done so much with the character. It's just that somebody chose the right character for the right time. Am I wrong?
I think it's more of like Brubaker and Fraction are actually Brubaker and Fraction are actually just writing a good story with Iron Fist, and they're using them right. Well, they found a way that people respond to. I mean, his original series only lasted 14 issues before someone decided, you know what, this sucks. Let's just spare all of these black dudes. Also got a series we're about to cancel, and they had a longer run just by the contrast of the two characters being together. It wasn't like people were so enamored with Power Man or Iron Fist when you brought them together. And now it's people are actually interested in seeing a story about Iron Fist by himself. Because it's written well.
Yeah, it's true. Because, well, let's not forget that there was a Iron Fist series back in like 2003, 2004.
It was like Iron Fist Wolverine or something.
No, it was Iron Fist.
Breathless. Fist.
Right.
Where it took, it was jokey. And the cartoon, the drawing was really manga esque.
Right.
Yeah.
And he like poked, he's like, I'm Iron Fist. Oh, well. Right. And he like shrugged a lot.
Exactly. It was a little too self aware.
Yeah.
It became like Dragon Ball Z.
Danny shrugged.
Yeah.
Scipio wept.
His shoulder by himself. That's in the Big Monkey Bible.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Scipio wept. And on that note,
better known as the Crime Bible.
It's time for a dramatic reading. And you're going to love it because it's sent in from Black Decade Boy. So, you know, turn it down a little because it's going to blow your eardrums.
Oh my God.
You're a real winner, Parker. When they auctioned off those big black clouds that hang over your life, you must have been the first fool to bid.
Hey, there you are, Tiger. I've been looking all over for you.
Mary Jane? Please, tell me something to cheer about. I need a dose of smiles right now. Have you thought about my proposal?
Proposal? Oh, that. That's what this dimpled darling is here for, Tiger. I've got something big, beautiful, and shiny. All for you.
What gives? This is the engagement ring I gave to you. Why are you returning it?
Come on, Tiger. You know good old MJ is too free a spirit to tie herself down to any one swinger, even to a brown-eyed hunk like you. There's a world of groovy guys out there, and this doll's got to be free to find them. Besides, Tiger, I'm not the down-home and marrying kind. Hey, put on a smile, dollface. I'll see you around sometime. We can still be friends, right, Tiger?
She jilted me. She jilted me. Well, this has really been a red-letter day, hasn't it? My aunt's in the critical ward because of me, and my gal virtually tells me we're through, that she doesn't want to see me anymore. What's going to happen next?
And scene. This has been Blockade Boy with an excerpt from The Amazing Whiny Bitch, Spider-Man, number 183, August 1978, written and edited by Spider-Man marriage hater Marv Wolfman.
We're back, and now it's time for our second topic, Blue Beetle. I think each one of us has chosen it as our favorite comic for the week, except for John Kerry, who doesn't read it because he's a heathen.
and a Philistine.
And a Philistine.
We cast you out.
You got to shut up for this, bro.
I read it. Thou needs to read the Big Monkey Bible. Anyway.
Skip weeps. Sorry. Originally a Fox comic character, Blue Beetle became owned by Charlton before DC bought the rights in 1983. A sort of on and off major player in the DCU, I want to ask, what did the Blue Beetle, and we're talking about Ted Kord here, bring to the DCU when he first came over? And we're going to start with Skip.
When he first came over,
right,
he was a Spider-Man-style kind of wise-ass. And that's all he brought. They didn't know what else to do with him.
He thought he Commander
looked like a bug. He looked like a bug. Yeah, he looked like a bug. And they didn't have much to do with him. He really didn't have substantial characteristics of his own until he was in Justice League International.
he said quietly.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you tapered off there. Yeah. Carrie?
My first exposure was probably Crisis, like at age 4. So he had a neat looking car. He had that going for him. He had a big flying bug. He was like Darkwing Duck in that he had a car shaped like his own head. And that's kind of awesome.
And a gun that shot light.
And a
I can fight Eclipso.
Dude, he schooled Eclipso.
He did. I was just going to say, after the Bwahaha era ended, Jurgens did his level best to make him and Booster into sort of respectable characters, and then everyone sort of threw it by the wayside to make them be wacky and talk about how he needed a girdle or whatever. Because, like, he took on an evil Justice League that existed in, like, the Adam's dreams or whatever. Like, alone. He jumped the Flash. That's pretty cool. Yeah. So he was like a
armed with a laser pointer.
He didn't even have that. Yeah. He went in alone. But he was sort of a lame Batman with more levity, I guess. I kind of like that.
And more trips. He was like Batman with a pratfall.
Like Owlman.
He needs goggles. More like
Devon.
What did he bring? He brought the laughter to DC. No, he did. But you know what I loved about Blue Beetle? He gave you the feeling that if somebody gave you enough money and if you worked out hard enough, you could be a damn superhero.
Like Nighthawk.
Right. Well, yeah, kind of, sort of. And, you know, and it's like every kid would kind of want to be Batman, but in reality, they would be Blue Beetle.
Because we realized he was much more obtainable.
Right,
like,
exactly.
I'll never be Batman.
I could be Blue Beetle.
Right. Well, I could fire BBs at people. Hell, I do that all the time.
And annoy people by flicking a flashlight in their face.
In my 7th issue, I could fight a guy literally called Ski Mask.
Yeah. Either effort, Ski Mask.
Brooks?
He was kind of like the guy who taught common sense in Justice League. When things got really crazy, it was Blue Beetle who kind of pointed out, like, you know what, Manga Khan is kind of stupid for fighting.
Hey, Ted, let's go buy an island.
Are we fighting killer penguins?
He was kind of funny, and he worked well with Booster Gold, and it was...
He was a staple of Birds of Prey for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was like half crippled, wasn't he?
No, he was
in a heart condition.
Why are we talking
we're getting
about
there? We're getting there.
Him because he sucks.
No, he doesn't.
The new Blue Beetle,
yes,
is great,
and the new Blue Beetle is great. And because there was a segue question, there was a setup. I have plans.
Sorry, I didn't come fast enough for you.
I didn't know we were only talking about 3 minutes, man.
You're making me weep.
So I want to say, in 2005, Blue Beetle as a character took on an interesting role in mostly being dead. They killed Ted Kord. That was a different role. They killed him.
He's the Elvis of the DC universe.
Now, and there are a lot of people who disagree, but I think it took something as drastic as Ted Kord's death to revitalize the character. And what we got was Jamie Reyes as a result. And you're making a Facebook, so I want to see, do you agree or disagree with that statement?
No, I was like, how you revitalize a character by killing him?
He got an honorable death.
Yeah, but
it was like you saw that he was a hero.
Yeah, but
like,
they revitalized the copyright on the name, effectively, because the current Blue Beetle has so little to do with the old Blue Beetle.
It's true.
That
it's like every previous Blue Beetle
right.
has been.
However, the original Blue Beetle comes up so not often that, like...
Except
kinda,
now,
yeah,
because, like, he's going to be in, like...
has a meaning, which is nice, but by the same token, it's not a revitalization of the character, it's just... This, I think it's kind of the same with Iron Fist. They can't launch a title with a new name. There's been a lot of trouble with that for like 15 years. People will give things one shot and then they're done. You stick Blue Beetle on the cover, you get everybody who's going to be like, man, I hated Blue Beetle, or man, I love Blue Beetle and I hated what they did to him. They're picking up the book and looking at it. So it's the same with Iron Fist, where it's just a character who has name recognition but not much else. You could do whatever you wanted with him. And it feels the same. Even Blue Beetle's a fantastic book, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that it's not a revitalization of the character, it's just a much better use of the title than it
fair enough,
used to have.
Yeah, it's more like what they should have done the first time. And I want to tackle the whole thing where the whole connection between Blue Beetle and Spider-Man.
Okay.
As I said early on, yeah, when Ted Kord kind of came, he was just a wisecracking hero, and he was kind of like, they didn't know what to do, so they sort of wrote him like Spider-Man.
Well, they're writing him like Spider-Man now.
Johnny.
It's the only connection between like Blue Beetle and Spider-Man is that they started out as teens, but Spider-Man got jumped into college like 2.5 years into his history, into his run. He's not like Jamie because he had no one to help him. All his supporting characters were basically Peters. Spider-Man had no one, and he couldn't talk to anyone about it, and he couldn't do. All he had to do was like, "Oh man, this is so hard. I can't tell anybody because I gotta keep my secret, and I'm made to die if I tell her."
All his supporting cast were villains or victims,
pretty much. And then he had like the hot older Betty Brant, but you know that's something totally different. But Blue Beetle has a whole support system who knows who he is and who's able to guide him into being the best superhero he can be, even though he doesn't really want to be a superhero. And it's something really new because it's you don't really see that with teen hero. Before.
Right, they're all founded in misery. And that's what I love about this comic, is that it's not like everyone in my family was dead and now I have to be a superhero. Yeah. You know, his origin was a rock fell from the sky and climbed onto his back. And instead of people being, you know, we're not going to help you, they're all there for him. I would say it's the same thing that made Buffy a good television show. That's what I equated to it from the first issue. You have, like, the Xander character in Paco, who's the car guy. He literally is the car guy.
He drives
the car. You've kind of got like smart Willow in what's her face's name?
Brenda.
And Brenda.
I don't remember her name.
Yeah, and Brenda. And then you have like his two kind of nerd. You have his two nerd friends that are giving a lot of information.
Whatever their names are.
Yeah.
One of them has a really great hat.
Second rate Oracle.
That's true.
Right. That hat is sweet.
And then he got his own judge.
But so
he's making his own judge.
But what you're right, exactly. And Peacemaker is his kind of really buff Giles, exactly. Exactly. So it's what's great about it is it allows for banter that is not play like underlined with like depression.
His girlfriend is Tracy 13. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Devon?
Oh no. I mean, it's just the ultimate book in my opinion. The fact that it's not always tied into like the whole big countdown, big picture, blah blah blah. I remember when you were telling me about Ben. I remember when you were telling me about the Reach and everything, and they had been mentioned in 52, and it was like the Reach shows up and then they just go away. And I appreciated that. It was like, okay, this is not gonna be drawn out over a year, you know? And I really, really like that. Plus the young man has the best supporting cast in comics right now.
Yeah.
It's like when you say supporting cast, they support him.
Here, here.
And each other. The last page of issue 19.
Oh, God, yeah.
I was talking to Devon about this, and basically we figured out when his parents show up, we cry. That's just all there is to it, because they're so wonderful. They just do something so loving and supportive, and you cry. Shut up, John.
I snickered.
You'd cry. That's why you're afraid to read it.
Yeah, that's it. I'm terrified
to cry.
It wasn't my general dislike of Keith Giffen books.
No, of those macho.
It was the fact that I was terrified I'd weep uncontrollably upon seeing a fictional character's parents be nice to him.
That's exactly what.
I'll give it two things. I read the second trade last night out of terror because I saw the topics for today and I was like, Mother of God, these are like two of like four books I don't read in the regular basis. So, I read the second trade. I got to give it that it's one of the most densely plotted books I can think of right now. It's not like it gets stories done in an issue, which is rare, and it doesn't feel like it's avoiding anything. It feels like everything that should have been in the story is there, which is nice. It's nice to see done in two, you know, not connecting to Countdown or whatever. And then the other was that, I can't remember the other, but it was good. I enjoyed the book. Yeah, I should start writing down bullet points.
good use of other characters. Like when he fought, was it Typhoon?
Oh, God, yeah.
Typhoon.
And Bruce Wayne comes out of nowhere, and he uses Bruce Wayne basically as a tool to get to where he needs to get.
Guy Gardner, getting a beer.
Guy Gardner saying, you're part of a legacy, kid. Here's some books on strategy. Ted Kord was more than just a joke. You know, and it's like
Robin showing up being like, hey man, you fight abysmally, I'm gonna teach you how to fight.
You suck.
Well, Lonar was in it.
And then he shows up in Teen Titans. He doesn't do anything, but it's kind of like
Hooray!
He's that guy you know down the street in the DC universe.
But I have a worry, and because it's so good, but it always feels like the comic is about to fall off. I always worry. And if you look at the solicitations for the next 3 months, it is tied into Sinestro Corps next month. After that is the very heartwarming issue where Jamie finds the man who crippled his father. And then...
Heartwarming? A very special issue.
Right. Right, he'll be like, this comic probably won't
He'll show up, we'll cry.
Exactly, he'll show up, we'll cry. And then he's in the Teen Titans. And it feels like DC will not allow this good comic to be itself.
I don't get that feeling with that.
You don't think
like, No, it's not like Sovereign 7, you know, when it was like, when it's like, okay, we're going to add Power Girl to this team, and then they're going to go to Gotham, and then they're going to hang out with Impulse, and then they're going to go to Gotham and then not hang out with Batman.
Sounds like the first year of Supergirl.
Right, exactly.
Sovereign was awful for two reasons.
No, we're off of that. But it's like, I don't get that feeling with, like, Blue Beetle. It's saying, this is the type of book that this could be. It's like, you know, in the sense of, this could be a big book. Yeah. You should be reading this. It's like, this is Teen Titans material. This is Green Lantern Corps material. This is a good book.
Devon, I want you to tell us, as a retailer,
what
has happened here with Blue Beetle?
Ben Hatton has been this book's champion.
Because I loved it from the first issue.
Yeah. Well, from, let's see, I guess 6 months ago when he really started championing this book's cause, we had about 12 subscribers for it, and I was only ordering like maybe 15 copies. We're damn near tripling. Like what we're ordering for the store, just on what Ben has done alone.
Because it's that good.
Yeah, because it's that good. The trade paperbacks, they're selling, and it's just a damn good book. People should know about this book. So yeah, as a retailer, I hope that this book stays around for a little while.
Really, the point for me, and it sums it up in the entire series, it's like the gravitas that it has, the levity it has, like everything it is in at the end of issue. That's what the comic is.
Well, you're right. It's tough to have both of them.
It is tough to have both, and I feel every single week it does.
Yeah.
I feel like every week there is both something funny and moving at exactly the same time.
Can I tell you when I absolutely got this book? I told Skip about this.
Sure.
But it's just a throwaway scene in, I think, like the 8th issue or something, where Peacemaker just shows up inexplicably inside of the Reyes house with his mother and his father there, and he starts barking orders and... you know, and there's a point where his father, Jamie's father, is just like, this is enough, this is my house, you are not going to stomp around my house, you are going to walk through the door like a man when you walk into my house. And there's a half of a beat where there's a standoff, and you could feel the tension in that room, where, and this is on the page, and you see Peacemaker glowering at him, and he's like, kill you, you man with a cane. And it's just like, but he's like, the next move I make is going to be the next move that's going to make, you know, this boy see his father as less than a man. And he totally backs down and he's like, it will not happen again, sir. And I was like, whoa, that is powerful.
And I cried.
Yeah. Hey, damn it, bro. And fair shame. Which he just did.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so... It's like every comic has so much. In issue... It was issue 13 for me where it was like, the Reaches just showed up. They're like, we're going to take over the world. And this 16-year-old boy is just like, bring it, S.A. Like, alien race! It was so good!
You know, the last time I felt this good about a comic book like this was Impulse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope that doesn't curse me. Saying that...
It's gonna get beat to death by comedy villains.
By that hunchback.
By the hunchback guy. Yeah.
Well, all right.
But I also think it's great because he fills a niche that no other character does, which is he's kind of being used as sort of a sidekick kid teen version of the Green Lanterns, which is kind of bizarre.
Right.
But once it's done, it's very refreshing. Yeah. Works very well.
Absolutely. So thanks. Now it's time. I think that was a good discussion. Sorry.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Oh, you know, it's nice to say thank you to guys.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, John Rogers. Hooray.
Hooray. Now it's time for a dramatic reading by the ever sending in Nate Soloway. The prolific.
The ever sending in Nate Soloway. That's like well furnitured.
Well furnitured. You guys never heard that. That was in the issue four. Anyway.
Oh, that was great.
Here we go.
At last, that is the establishment I seek. Innkeeper, prepare your finest feast. This establishment has been honored above all others. Fire Lord deigns to dine here. Hurry! The former Herald of Galactus must not be kept waiting. I ordered you to prepare a feast for me. Do it! Now!
I don't want to be any trouble, pal. I'd love to make you a pizza. But I'm only set up to serve the breakfast trade now. I haven't even fired up my ovens yet.
Your ovens need fire? I can remedy that. Hey, what are you doing? My oven! There. I trust that oven has been sufficiently heated. Now then, shall you begin the preparation of my meal? Or shall I continue to heat up the rest of your establishment?
You want some anchovies or green peppers on that pizza?
This has been a dramatic reading from Amazing Spider-Man number 269, 1985, and a gentle reminder of why you never invite a Herald of Galactus out for pizza.
For our third and final topic, we're going to talk about retroactive continuity, or the retcon. Wikipedia, the source of all things intelligent, defines retcon as the deliberate changing of previously established facts in a work of serial fiction.
Which was then edited 2 minutes later.
It also applies to when the game master in a role-playing game... Yes. I thought this topic was particularly on point because both Blue Beetle and Iron Fist, as we have discussed, have been the subject of recent retcons and reimaginings. While some people find them the truest forms of fan fiction, I say that retcons can be a very, very good thing. Except when Judd Winnick does them and gives people daughters. So, Skip, can they be a good thing?
Of course they can.
Are they usually a good thing?
Is rain usually a good thing? I mean, what does it mean? He's like, do you need it to rain? Are you carrying an umbrella? If you're carrying an umbrella, it's a great thing, you know? Are you ready for it? Does the environment need it? That's the question that you have to ask with retcons. You don't need Dr. Light to be retconned to be a rapist.
For him to be a scary bad guy?
Right. But you need some sort of retcon of Blue Beetle to refresh the concept. You know, and that's really the thing that needs to be taken into account. The thing that bothers me about retcons is when retcons are used to put current sensibilities back into the past. I've still never gotten over the fact that there are people who really think that there was an Amazing Man in World War II. Like, no, Roy Thomas has deceived you. This is not true. Black people were not allowed in the JSA. It didn't happen. It wasn't that way at all. It's a lie.
Was he in the JSA? Not even the All-Star Squad.
There was no All-Star Squad.
That's also true.
That's a terrible acronym.
You have been deceived.
I just didn't think he was in. You know, turning Dr. Light into a rapist is another example of that. There are probably a lot of others.
That are good. Carrie.
If they're organically done, they're occasionally very, very necessary. Because, I mean, when you get down to it, Reed Richards has to be, like, 87 years old. And at some point, there had to have been some subtle retcon that said he wasn't in World War II, he was in NAM or something. Like, they keep doing it with Tony Stark to prevent any character from being over, like, 30 in the Marvel Universe. Captain America was defrosted at some weird 15 years ago point, depending on, like, when you happen to start reading. It's necessary if you're going to keep using characters that otherwise would be quite old at this point. Spider-Man, I think, has had some subtle ones, because otherwise he's been in college for, like, 22 years, you know? And he's an inept student, but he's not that dumb. So it sometimes has to be done. sometimes it's done for the sake of being, you know, extreme and edgy and crap, and that's just stupid. It's poor storytelling. But when it's necessary, it's necessary. So it's a necessary evil, I suppose. And when you're dealing with characters that never really should have gone more than, like, 10 years with the same story, you're going to have to do this stuff.
Devon?
I enjoy the retcon when it takes a character and it basically asks the question, what do we know about this character so far? And it starts stripping away, like, the nonsense, where it's like, okay, and Wonder Woman had, like, a black sister who was made from black clay, and, yeah, and we're going to keep running with that, and someone goes, no, we don't need that. It's like, what do we really know about her? She was with the Amazons, Paradise Island.
Was she really made out of black clay?
Yeah.
And it's just like, so when Perez gets his hands on the character, suddenly it's just like, okay, she's like a young girl who comes to America, doesn't speak English, and is not a superhero. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. That's how this should be. You know, it's like, and why is she wearing, like, you know, the American flag? And it's like, no, someone crash landed on Paradise Island.
Right.
And had the flag, and she wears it in honor of her.
Yeah, a lot of that was pretty sensible.
Right, yeah. So yeah, you know, these are sensible things, and you know, like, Geoff Johns is the master of the retcon, where it's just like, okay, Hawkman's crazy, alright, well, let's make some sense out of all this nonsense. Right. So, you know, I love it when someone goes, alright, let's make the retcon work for us.
Brooks?
Retcons are alright sometimes, and not alright others.
Give me an example of a not all right. Brooks.
Sugar is sweet,
except when it's not. Oh, you snowed that. That was great.
And the sad part is, you stole that from John Kerry.
John Kerry got the best stuff to steal. So
I've been to his apartment. Who doesn't?
I best girlfriend. He does. Yeah.
Damn.
He's just gonna hit me now.
For no reason.
Sorry. What were you saying, Brooks?
Sometimes it seems unnecessary for things to change. But they retcon, like, stupid stuff. They'll retcon a storyline just because they don't like it. And then they take the time to actually mention that this storyline didn't happen.
Yeah.
If you didn't want it to exist, just don't mention it again.
Yeah.
There's no reason to retcon bad stories when they ultimately had no lasting change to the character.
Except
what's a bad
when,
example?
Like retconning Superman's mullet. That's unnecessary.
Or the fact that, like, they subtly did it in One More Day, where you had, if you look, they do like a 5-page history of everything Spider-Man. Spider-Man had a baby that had a daughter.
Wow.
And
you know what?
And Norman Osborn.
And he doesn't look like it.
Thank you, Susan. Sorry. Spider-Man and Mary Jane have a baby. And Norman Osborn convinced them that the baby was stillborn and took it off to raise it. If you look at the One More Day...
And the cabbage.
Right, yeah. Basically, if you look at the, like, One More Day, 5-page page thing, it just says they had a baby and it was a miscarriage. They did it really subtly, and they were like, we don't want that storyline anymore. You know, we don't even want someone 10 years down the line. Because that's what happens. That's why I think retcons occur.
That's why the Clone Saga happened.
Right. It's because it's because comic book fans are so continuity heavy. If we were just willing, and I'm going to agree with Skip on something, which is crazy, but if we were willing to let continuity go, if we were willing to have a more golden age sensibility that what happened in this issue doesn't necessarily happen in this issue, we would never have a retcon because we never would need it. But the moment you're like, yeah, but back in, like, you know, 8 years ago when, you know, Spider-Man stubbed his toe and it led to another spider being made, you know, now we got to get rid of that.
Well, it's like wrestling continuity. Like, there's a small part of me that's going, Jeff Hardy should get a title shot because he has the IC belt, which technically makes him the number one contender. No one has referenced that in like 15 years. I shouldn't remember it. So they aren't going to reference it because it doesn't matter anymore. That's right. Like, I vastly prefer, if you're just going to ignore something, ignore it. Don't draw attention to it. Like they used to do in X-Men. they would say something never happened. They wouldn't just ignore it. They'd have, like, Mr. Sinister come in and say, like, no, you're a clone. You know, like, I cloned you instead of just making a baby. You know? So, he cloned Scott Summers' wife to have Scott Summers have a baby with her instead of taking the genetic material he clearly had from both of them and making one child. I'm explaining this to Caroline, who you don't know is here, dear listener.
John, I have to disagree with you, because if they simply don't ever mention it again,
I'm going to come
along. Gone away, somebody else, that's right, some crazy writer is going to say...
Yeah.
It's how we get Iron Fist.
A perfect example is, I am still waiting to be told, and it will happen, that Luther was never president.
Oh God,
yeah.
That needs to go away. Well, and
I think
the last person who mentioned it was Meltzer, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff Pierce should not have been Secretary.
That's
of Education.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah.
Or have a daughter. Like, and that's good. The thing
right.
is, and if you guys will agree or disagree. A bad retcon is needless flavor.
Yes.
Right?
It's like throwing like cayenne pepper in there because it's like, you know, oh, well, I think this needs to be hot. And it's like, did you taste it? You know?
Right. It's enjoying something that you've eaten. It's like enjoying a pizza that you've loved for a long time. You're like, I love Jefferson Pierce. I love the character. But you know what would be great on this? Thank you, Skip. It's like, you know, it's like if you threw on, like, suddenly you're like, you know what, this needs a big trout. Right on the top of it. I need this pizza with some trout. You're like, it doesn't add to it, but you're like, man, this would be cool with trout. And you know what, he needs a daughter that he has never mentioned in 30 right. years. And the problem with it is it changes the character.
Right. Well, it also, that was a transparent attempt to add legitimacy to a character that Winnick had created. Because otherwise you're just dealing with yet another, like, I can do density control.
Winnick loves Black Lightning. He had a whole speech about Black Lightning and outside it. It's ridiculous.
But he wants to be a guy that when people look back at Black Lightning's history, now they have to go, Judd Winnick did this. Which
but you
is
know what?
Ridiculous.
You know what? And some writer will come along and write it well and retcon Judd Winnick out of it.
God willing. So, right. At the moment, we have Wikipedia saying right. Winnick did this.
Winnick did this.
So instead of focusing on making their legacy writing definitive stories with the character,
right?
They force feed
something.
Yeah.
Into their mythology, and if they do it retcon it, it's like, okay, it's safe now.
Right. Exactly.
I've wrapped the pill in cheese to get the dog to swallow.
Right. Like, you know, it's like, and I know that you probably won't love this, Skip, but it's like, I think one of the best, like, instances of retconning was when Bruce Wayne is, like, in a fever dream, and Grant Morrison has him refer to the Black Book, the Black Case Book. And it's like, the Black Case Book, that's all the crazy nonsense from the 50s that you can't quite explain.
Yeah. It's a closet with a UFO in it.
Right, exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it totally makes sense. And, you know, like, another good bit of retconning was, you know, if you're a Legion of Superheroes fan, you go, how did all those, like, planets get seeded? And you go,
right.
Valor.
That was brilliant.
Valor did it.
And now it's been retconned out.
Yeah,
which sucks.
Right, and now it has no explanation. Right.
JLA Hitman is a good retcon. You've thrown in a backward story to explain something, I guess.
Cool. To wrap this up, I want to ask if there was one retcon that you could undo, what would it be? And we're going to start with Carrie.
Probably the last time they moved Tony Stark up a war. He got kicked up from early Vietnam to
Korea.
He was in Vietnam. Prior to the outbreak of the war. Quite. So it got moved up to Iraq at one point, and then recently to Afghanistan, and that takes like 2 years off the character. Like, let the guy be 40, for God's sake. I like everything else about the Warren Ellis retcon origin. That part was just like, why are you even bothering?
Mm-hmm. Skip?
Hippolyta being Wonder Woman in World War II. Mm. Which makes the real Wonder Woman her own legacy character. It's madness. I mean, it's almost as bad as having Wonder Girl be in the Teen Titans the first time they did it. It's like, that's crazy.
Brooks?
I don't know. I don't like people to, like, disagree on a Superman meets Lex Luthor when they're younger story. Because one people have their teenagers, and other people that they met, like, the kid school playpen. Just give me one definitive thing, and everyone can just agree on it.
Devon?
You made me have hair.
Jason Todd. I wish he never came back. It's they're going to have to do a lot of explaining as to why he's back. And I think in the long run, everyone's going to go, Superboy punched what?
They're already doing that. But.
Yeah. I want Aunt May to stay dead. Because that way, because she's died twice, and each time she was like a clone. If she was dead now, there'd be one more day. That's all I got to say.
The devastatingly heartwarming one more day?
The devastatingly
It's got levity and gravitas.
Levity and gravitas. Yeah.
Which keeps you centered.
It's right in the middle. It's tuned to a frequency of despair.
I hate you guys. That's what I hate. You guys.
On your birth.
I pour my soul into this every week.
and we maintain a combination of gravitas and levitas.
Shut up. All right, now it's time for one more dramatic reading, and then a word from our sponsor, and then recommendations. All right.
I contributed more to this atom-powered engine than the other men put together. Oh, how I'd love to destroy Rich's power, bring him down to his knees. Ah! Duh, I got a bad dose of that radioactive material. This is Rich's fault! He did this to me! I'll destroy him! This device will start his downfall. Suddenly I feel I have superhuman powers! A great capacity to do evil! That was from Richie Rich by somebody.
Big Monkey Comics has two fantastic stores, one located in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and the other in Washington, D.C., which is where this podcast is recorded. If you have any interest in the comics mentioned on today's show, simply swing on by and grab them. Yet, Big Monkey Comics is so much more than a simple store. On the first and third Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m., we have the Women's Comic Discussion Group, which was recently mentioned in the Washington Post Sunday Source. Also, we're in the middle of the Starro Attacks HeroClix Tournament, and while it's already started, that does not mean you can't play. So come on by this Saturday, October 13th, to compete in the comic-inspired tabletop strategy game. Finally, on Wednesday, October 31st, we're hosting a Halloween-slash-comic-soon party. So come boogie down with the Big Monkey crew. Stay tuned for more information on that. That's 1722B, 14th Street, Northwest, in Washington, D.C. And if you can't make it to our physical location, catch us online at www.bigmonkeycomics.com for news, reviews, merchandise, and Big Monkey Radio. Big Monkey, where comics are more fun than ever. Now it's time for recommendations, where panelists take the time to note comics that came out in the last 2 weeks that were worthy of it.
Take the time to do that.
I will note. Now we're going to start with Skip.
I'd like to recommend JLA 13, because it's really getting the JLA back on track. Please read it. And much more importantly, long term, is the new Richie Rich compilation. The poor little Rich. This is not funny. Poor little Rich.
She got that right.
125 classic stories from Richie Rich spanning 1953 to 1971.
When Skip was a ripe 20.
If you want to make it to be a ripe 20, Richie Rich was one of the most popular characters of all time. He had 40 concurrent titles. Richie Rich is God. You need to buy Richie Rich and understand, just try and understand why Richie Rich was so popular for so long. And the art was really good, too.
Lead in the
world. Why are rich white people so popular all the time?
Carrie?
Those rich white people. Always being held down. Yeah,
I'm tired of rich white people getting picked on. We are a minority.
If only Richie Rich grew up to be
we are. Girl,
trust me, this man is not rich. I see my paycheck.
Carrie, what do you recommend?
On a completely different tack, Lobster Johnson number 2, Mike Mignola is nailing writing like a Doc Savage story, effectively, which, granted, isn't terrifically hard. You just need wackiness and a very serious main character, but it's real good at what it is. It's very entertaining.
Devon?
I'm going to take 2, Ben, believe it or not.
For hurry.
Empowered, Volume 2. Haven't read it, but I read the first one. And the first one was awesome.
Yes,
go
was.
Pick up the first one. Come to Big Monkey Comics. Buy the second one.
Buy the first one here, too, actually.
Yeah, you can buy the first one.
bundle.
And then the second one, it's like, I've been talking about this book for, I guess, 4 years now, and it's finally in trade paperback, Loki. It is, like, one of the most beautifully painted, like, things I've ever seen. And it finally asks the question, well, what happens when you win? What happens when the bad guys win? Mm. And it's just an incredibly good, just an incredibly good story. And the end is, like, an ending where you just, like, that makes so much sense. It hurts sometimes. Mm. So, yeah, Loki, the trade paperback.
Brooks?
I recommend that Marvel Supervillain Team Up, MODOK 11. It was pretty cool. Hey, I switched it up on you, Ben. it was interesting story. People backstabbing everyone left and right, and it's crazy, and it's beautifully drawn, and it's a good book. And Uncanny X-Men, because that's good as well.
Nice. And I'm going to recommend Metal Men 3, simply because it's too hep for
what?
Skip.
What? It's insanity!
It's just too cool for
it's
you, Skip.
It is over at Saint X right
it
now.
Is so weird. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
It's like...
The art makes no sense.
It's brilliant. I read every page and I'm like, man, I just want to go smoke a bowl. Maybe I'll understand it.
The numbers mystify me.
It's brilliant. It's so good.
The ads are and the staples attacked
me. I really dig it. And of course, Blue Beetle 19, which might be the best issue so far. And that's like saying this is the best steak I've ever eaten. Like, it's just so good. It's like the best.
And this is from a man who eats bacon covered with chocolate.
Right? Oh, man.
Wrapped around steak. Manhattan multi-millionaire.
I want foie gras topped french fries. Like, that's what I'm going. I'm moving to Montreal because they do that there. And on that note, we'll be right back with the lightning round. Like an old woman who can't see over her steering wheel, it's the lightning round, where we take the time to answer the questions submitted by listeners like you. I don't know, I'm just trying to come up with really bizarre lightning metaphors.
Is that a line from Metal Man 3?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. My future self gave it to me and then punched me in the face. So for our first question, Chris asks... is this new trend of original or older writers returning to books that they haven't written in 10 years, e.g. Levitz on JSA, Wolfman on Nightwing, and Shooter on Legion of Superheroes, a good thing or a bad thing? And we're going to start with Skip.
Well, like retconning, it depends. Or Rain, it depends on the circumstances. If it's Shooter, it's a good thing. If it's Wolfman, it's a bad thing.
Fair enough. Carrie?
Shooter's admitted that he hasn't read Legion since he left. That's a hell of a gap.
No.
It's Legion. He doesn't need to read it.
That's true. He did sort of invent it. But yeah, it is thoroughly dependent on who the writer is and who the character is. Because there are a lot of guys like it, that I'd rather not see writing those books again. But as long as it's not Conway on Spider-Man.
Devon?
I'm going to say it's a bad thing because I'm not looking forward to Chuck Dixon's return to Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he had said pretty much everything he had to say with that character. And, you know?
There are five of us sitting here who will each write a comic. Call us.
Right.
There are new writers, you know?
I would call me. I'll write Sugar and Spike.
Keep reaching on there. God.
No.
Brooks?
It depends. I mean, well, Marv Wolfman has done like
Sugars.
He's holding like Trading World.
Shut up.
Marv was like Trading World with Nightwing, just keeping a story going. And like Levitz, his story was basically a retcon of a origin that Johns had done like a couple of months earlier with Gentleman Ghost, which is just weird. And I don't know what Shooter has been, I guess, what, since the claim? Whatever, but
he's been tall.
The only thing Shooter has going for him is that he can do anything with the Legion, and it's like he doesn't need any backstory for it.
I figure as long as they stay alive for it, you got no worries. You know, like, they're old though. Their hips break, they fall out.
Sorry. I know. Wolfman is still alive.
That's right.
Damn.
Not as
concerned. So am I, in spite of Wolfman's best ever.
Every day, as John looks over his shoulder, where is Wolfman with a sniper rifle to take me out?
Who's that Leather Clan man?
All right.
I'm John Duck.
Mella asks, what's your favorite Guilty Pleasure title? And we know Skips. It's Richie Rich. No, i.e., what title does critical or popular opinion say is crap, but you can't help but love?
Ben is Justice League of America.
Brooks?
I read Outsiders.
Skip?
I don't read crap.
Oh, yeah, Star Trek, you're four. That's Skip's answer. I'll just answer it for him.
Burn. Lord. I'm not saying
Carrie?
I'm trying to think of something that's, like, legitimately bad that I still read that I haven't given up on. Like, Batman about half the time lately. Batman, I've compared to an abusive relationship. Batman has punched me in the face and made me explain it at work the next day. And that's how bad it is. I don't even have a job, and that's what happens.
Devon, what's a guilty pleasure?
Painkiller Jane. It's just, I don't know why I love that thing. I mean, she gets kicked out of, like, you know, buildings, like, snaps her neck, jumps back up. Then next thing, you know, she's like, you know what? I'm going to reward myself by getting a tattoo on my ass. And it's just like, and then we're treated to like 2 pages of her getting a tattoo on her ass. And I don't know, it does something for me. It's a chick with guns. Sorry, I like it.
Fair enough. I don't read bad comics like Skip, so I'll just answer for Mike P. Spider-Man loves Mary Jane, but no. I mean, come on, guys. This is where you guys go. Every girl comic Ben reads is a guilty pleasure because it's crap.
Yeah, you must admit to it, so it's not really a guilty pleasure.
I don't believe in guilty pleasures, actually. Yeah. Everything, you know, if you love it, there's nothing.
I'm Catholic. I got guilt bought. And I don't feel guilty. Well, I mean, I feel guilty about, like, reading as many comics as I do. But not specific instances thereof. Like, well, the year of Justice League was a, well, it wasn't a pleasure. It was guilty. Somebody should feel bad for it.
No, I mean, I read comics, a lot of comics that people are like, you read a lot of crap, and Knights at the Dinner Table, I buy, like...
Okay, I will fess up.
Okay.
I am reading Metal Men Showcase. It's lunatic.
It's so good, though.
It's insane. It's brilliant. I mean, the part where Tina gets attacked by a living omelet... I just had to put it down and walk out of the room because I couldn't handle it.
Challengers of the Unknown. There's my guilty pleasure. I love that comic. They're like, hey, we're four dudes who can't die, so we're going to be retarded. If Johnny Knoxville plays, you know, the Red in the movie, it'd be like Bam Margera. Johnny Knoxville, Steve-O are challengers of the unknown.
Professor
Hayden, I would love to see them in purple outfits with like white gloves on, like Knoxville challenging the unknown.
Hey, wait, listeners, please write in and tell me why. What is it? Prof Haley has the aquatic ability on his paw.
Because he's a scuba diver.
He's a skin diver. Champion skin diver.
He's a champion
like
skin
that.
Diver.
Screw you, readers. We beat you to it.
Okay,
you didn't
mind.
Read that, did you? What the hell's a champion
and Skip,
skin diver?
And Skip, we're on radio. Skip, we're on radio. They're listeners.
I know.
All right. Final question. Jeff asks, what would be your best and worst cross-company team-up?
Best and worst.
Gary?
Christ. Bone Punisher. There you go. That's the answer to both of them. Bone and Punisher.
Skip?
Okay, the worst? Oof. The worst would be X-Men JLA. That would make me cringe. No, X-Men JSA. That would make me cringe. The best, Bruce Wayne and Richie Rich.
Yeah. Poor little rich boys.
Oh, that would be excellent. Brooks? Richie would teach Bruce Wayne how to be happy.
And make robotic maids.
She'll keep me happy.
Brooks?
Oh, God. Worse would be like Geo-Force Captain Ultra.
Can I change my answer?
No. Best would be like, I don't know, some kind of weird JSA Files Batman meets Captain America.
That would be good, actually. Yeah.
That'd be good.
So we're doing best, worst?
Best and worst.
Best one would... Oh, boy. Best one. Superman, Captain America, that would be the best one. The worst one would be Dr. Light and the Vagina Dentata from Hulk Girl. Yeah, there we go.
That's not a company crossover.
I laughed so hard at Vagina Dentata, I didn't make noise.
My best would be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Captain Carrot. I would love that.
Wow.
And my worst would be Jim Ballant and Ninja Scroll.
Oh, wow.
Just Jim Ballant?
I would go lightly meets Ninja. No, it'd be Taro. Taro and Ninja Scroll. I think that'd be like, it'd be the worst.
Ridiculous, over-the-top violence and gratuitous nudity.
No. Can I change that?
Yeah.
Can I change mine? It would be Power Pack 100 Bullets.
Ooh.
I'd read
Wait,
that.
Is that one of their
Oh my god. They get a little brother a gun. He's like, I have a power!
This crazy space alien ruined your life.
Power? Here's a bad taste shake.
And on that note, if you have any questions, comments, or recommendations, please go ahead and send them to Ben at BigMonkeyComics.com. And thanks, guys. It's great being back. Have a good evening.